The Money Show.
Business books.
At 19 minutes past 7 o'clock, we get into your business books feature. Bronwyn Williams, thank you so much for joining us this evening. Trends translator and future finance specialist at Flux Trends. Dirty Money, the economics of sex and love. Before people get carried away, let's unpack this one. What exactly is the book about?
Hi, thank you so much for having me back here. So this is a book by Marina Adshade, and she wrote it in 2011. And why I was rereading it now is because she made quite a few predictions about what would happen to the markets of sex and love. And here she's really talking about our relationships with each other would play out in the next recession. And I think it's quite interesting to see how many of her predictions and correlations have continued into the rather turbulent economic times we've had in 2020 and 2021.
And those turbulent times have certainly borne some rather interesting fruit, right? I mean, this book kind of speaks a lot about it. But from 2011, I mean, what are some of those predictions made?
Yeah, so she wrote it obviously just after the world had come out of the 2008-2009 crisis. In 2011, you know, many of the stock markets and economies were still struggling and not exactly bounced back from what had happened in that great recession. And one of the things she spoke about that we can probably start with is that for a long time, economists have spoken about the lipstick index, which says that during recessions, people, and particularly women, want to spoil themselves with small things. So they engage in acts of self-care by purchasing small treats to make them feel good about themselves. So that's one of the reasons why things like lipstick sales and cosmetic sales tend to go up in recessions, even though that might seem a little bit counterintuitive. It's because we can't have all the big things that we want, but we can still make ourselves feel good about our lives with a small little purchase. But one of the things Marina Adshade looked at is she saw that actually in 2008-2009, one of the things that went up was purchases of adult toys. Again, they can be seen as small acts of self-care. And it was something that she said she would not be able to corroborate whether that was correct or not until there was another recession. But lo and behold, last year, we saw that sex toys and adult toy purchases did indeed go up. And in fact, in New Zealand, which had one of the strongest lockdowns across the world, adult bedroom accessories, should we put it that way, tripled in sales volume compared to 2019. Wow. So that was the first prediction I can say she managed to get right. In this case, correlation did seem to carry through to be a bit of causation in this case.
Wow, found that very interesting, actually. Some of this data, I guess, kind of speaks as well to if there wasn't a lockdown, if there wasn't the sense of COVID-19, would these have all been as true as we sort of lay out as well right now? I guess that might be a question that might be unfair to the conversation too. But nonetheless, so the science...
Not necessarily. It would have worked together, definitely. They would have gone together there. We've probably seen increases in that trend due to the actual dynamics of the way this crisis played out.
Yeah.
But it was interesting to see that across the board, we did see people turning to bedroom activities to not just fill the boredom of lockdowns and to look for some form of connection, but also for all sorts of other reasons. We've seen the rise of platforms like OnlyFans and massive growth in the web-based porn-type companies like your Pornhubs, et al. So there does seem to be some sort of correlation. And in fact, there was another study that I read a few years back that I think I actually spoke about on this show too. It showed that one of the few leading indicators for jobs figures was actually web traffic to porn sites. So you could generally tell when people had lost their jobs when they were starting to look for, shall we say, entertainment to fill their future, you know, perhaps less filled hours ahead.
Sure. All right. Some interesting ones on that one. So the science of sexonomics is born. How much money does an ugly guy need to have to attract as many women via an online dating site as a hot man? Just some of the questions in the book.
Well, this book in particular, I think the one that's quite relevant to what's going on in South Africa is the dynamics of how relationship dynamics play out between wealthier and less wealthy families and partnerships. And one of the other things that we can definitely see has played out, according to what Marina had basically predicted in her book, that happened last year too, is that poorer girls do tend to engage in more premarital sex than wealthy girls for a whole host of reasons. And this, again, we have seen play out according to what we expected. In South Africa, teen pregnancies, I think, increased 60% last year, whereas we had quite a drop-off in birth rates across the UK, the USA, and much of the more developed world from an economic perspective. So that's one of the more sort of sobering statistics we can look at there. And one of the reasons that the author hypothesizes that this happens is that young girls from poorer areas have less to lose by getting pregnant when they are young than a richer girl that might see herself as having more of a future ahead. For someone like myself that works in the trends and futures space, this makes a lot of sense, because we do talk about how, whether we're looking at it from a futures perspective or an economics perspective, that expectations do tend to actually dictate what happens in our reality. Quite often our expectations become self-fulfilling prophecies. If you believe that you don't have much of a future ahead of you, you're going to make different choices to someone who believes that they do have a prosperous future ahead. And as such, we see inequalities exacerbating across different parts of the world and against different socioeconomic strata, which is quite a sobering trend to see that those do play out in the numbers in terms of young girls getting pregnant here in South Africa, whereas other young women are having less children and focusing more on their careers. So if we roll that forward in a few decades, we see that the divide again between those different cohorts of young girls just increases.
Sure. Wow, some of this data is really just interesting. Also, speaking about modern marriage and the opportunity to consume more goods and services, how exactly does that play out? I mean, what is it actually trying to unpack with that one?
Yeah, so monogamy and polygamy is quite an interesting dynamic that she gets into in quite a lot of detail in the book. And what we see is that monogamy is essentially a tool that benefits low status males, as she puts them, more than it benefits any other cohort in your community. And if you start to unpack this from an evolutionary perspective and how the differences in the sexes play out, it starts to make a bit of sense, in that if people are allowed to form any sort of relationships or homes that they like, if polygamy is more sort of socially accepted, what we find is that women would be happy to be second or third wives of a very high status male. So in our current society, you can imagine that there are a lot of women that wouldn't mind being, say, Elon Musk's or Jeff Bezos's third, fourth, or fifth wife, compared to being, say, the wife of just an ordinary laborer back at home. So we say that monogamy basically protects the rights of young men to find a partner, even if they're not the highest status males in society. And this dynamic really does, we do see it playing out across a lot of the dynamics that are happening in our real world right now. I'm not sure how many of you are familiar with just how deep the she session, as they term it, has become across parts of the world, particularly China and India, but actually almost everywhere in the world. We see that there's quite a differential developing between how many girl children and boy children are born. This is due to the rise of things like selective abortions, where many families would choose to actually rather terminate pregnancies where girls are conceived compared to boys because of the economic benefits of having boys. It's a very sad reality of our society. But what's happened is we've ended up with many communities where there are far more young men than there are women. And suddenly you can see that the benefits of monogamy become a little bit mixed up if not all of those young men can be partnered up with a woman. Ironically, though, this ends up being quite good for young women, because in societies where there is a higher ratio of men to women, women have more bargaining power in the dating and sex market, to the point that we've started seeing that for some young women in China, even though there are more than enough young men to go around if they wanted to get married, we see increases in trends in things like prostitution, because the young woman realizes she can command quite a high price on that sort of relationship trade market compared to what she could get if she was to settle for a particular partner. This is a really interesting point, because it also drills down into what goes on to the teen sex and dating market. Because again, you might think intuitively that a society that has a lot of young men would be a society that's not necessarily a great place to be a woman. But in fact, it's quite the converse. In a society where there's a high ratio of men to women, women have more bargaining power. They can make more choices. And in fact, in communities where there are more young men than young women, we find that virginity is preserved for longer. In other words, if you want to protect your young daughter's virtue, the best thing you can do is to put her into a community where there are more men than women, which again is counterintuitive, but is what you see playing out. And we see this with what's going on with virginity rates for young people today. Across most of the developed world, we now see that people over the age of 59 are getting it on more than people in the age group 18 to 35, which I think is quite extraordinary. So your grandparents are likely getting more action than you are, particularly if you are a young man.
Wow. Okay. Saying a lot indeed. That's definitely quite an interesting one. Wow. So the book is called Dirty Money, The Economics of Sex and Love. The trends over here are certainly quite interesting. A whole lot to really unpack across this entire book. It's a book then by Marina Adshade as well, talking about the sexy science of sexonomics being revealed. Bronwyn Williams, thank you so much for that. Appreciate the time this evening. Trend translator and future finance specialist at Flux Trends.